everybody, and welcome to Hour 2 of the Young Turks. I have replaced John Iderola. My name is Kim Horcher. This is Mark Thompson, Ben Mankiewicz. Again,
Upgraded, haven't we, Ben?
Well, we have, yeah. I mean, I was going to say, you said I've replaced John Iderola, and I was going to say, there's no replacing John Iderola, and then I thought, no, there is.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you just put somebody else in a chair, and then he's been replaced.
I have some tweets here that make no sense to me. Hopefully they do to you, because they're regarding Hour 1, and I wasn't around for that.
I wasn't around for most of it.
All right, I'll take a shot.
Daniel, these were with hashtag TYT Live, by the way, if you want to participate in the conversation. Use that hashtag. Daniel Perea says, if all the old people die because they don't have health insurance, they won't be around to vote Republicans out.
Right. Oh.
Okay.
Well,
yeah.
We know what that was related to.
That was with the health care, and then our discussion about how many older people were around who are Democrats and who vote Democrat. We had a conversation about that last hour.
Yeah, right. 65 and older, by the way, voters went for Trump over Clinton, 53 to 45. Same advantage for Republicans, more or less, as in 2012. So I was just wrong. But there have been years when Democrats have won the senior vote. But Romney beat Obama in 2012, 56-44.
Okay. This one makes less sense to me. I find President Biff's lack of humanity disturbing. Oh, actually, it does. But why a Star Wars quote with Back to the Future? I like it, but why?
I find President Biff's?
Biff, like Biff Tannen, the villain from Back to the Future.
Right.
He's like this blonde guy who's out of control, really rich. And lastly, I have Danger Carlos Danger saying, I feel sorry for Jason Rubin and Francis Maxwell
having to do
shit like that. Mm. I'd rather be fired than do such commentary. What are they talking about? Sports? Me too.
Were they on? Did we do something with Jason and Francis?
No, we didn't today.
That's confusing. This may be for something no one understands.
All right. Well, anyway. But it's okay to feel sorry for Jason Rubin and Francis Maxwell.
The what?
What's that?
Oh, the ad.
No. They chose to do that. That was their idea.
What was the ad?
It's them sitting in the control room. Mm-hmm. And doing commentary over Jake talking.
Oh, right, right,
so
right.
They
were doing Mystery Science Theater of Jake.
I have a controversial opinion, which is I don't like Mystery Science Theater. And I feel like I should, as the host of Nerd Alert.
It's controversial because it's wrong.
It's a great show.
I don't want to hear these opinions.
Welcome to the 21st century. And you know where you work.
We don't talk during the movie.
Generally, they're movies everybody's very familiar with, to the point that it's funny to hear.
Or the movies are so incoherently bad that their commentary is what.
Not for me.
All right. There's some super talented guys among
they
them.
They are.
Sort of a friend.
The new one has Jonah Ray on it, who I like a lot. Okay, well, let's get into the show and some stories, and we're going to have to switch gears very quickly to Bill Cosby. They say you should speak to what you know, so Bill Cosby is going to be doing his sexual assault town hall tour, specifically on how to avoid sex assault charges, but some who perhaps don't believe him are calling it a getaway with rape tour.
Yeah.
So, there's Bill Cosby. It's described as a town hall style speaking tour to educate young people about sexual assault allegations. The comedian will begin his summer motivational speaking tour in Alabama as early as July. And Andrew Wyatt, who is Bill Cosby's spokesperson, said, "This is bigger than Bill Cosby. This issue can affect any young person, especially young athletes of today. They need to know what they're facing when they're hanging out and partying, when they're doing certain things that they shouldn't be doing, and it also affects married men."
First of all, Andrew Wyatt, the good news is that a spokesman has got a job coming in the Trump administration whenever he wants it. Statement made no sense.
You know what?
No, one sentence didn't.
If you'd like to be a spokesman for evil, please contact us at this rent.
This is a $20 bill. Mark, do you gamble at all, Kim?
I don't.
Okay, all right. Well,
but I will. What are you doing?
I'm just saying $20 that he never gives one of these talks.
I couldn't agree more.
He says he's got one scheduled. So I'm saying he's got one scheduled. It says Andrew Wyatt says he has one scheduled in Alabama in July. I will put $20 on the table and says He never has that talk. It's already scheduled, according to Andrew White. You can make the easiest $20
ever.
Seems
like it's easy money.
This seems like a bad idea, though. I mean, from any of us looking from the outside, the optics on this are bad. It's less than a week after a mistrial was declared in Cosby's sexual assault case with Andrea
Constand.
And this is also not Cosby's first controversial lecture tour. Previously, he gave a series of talks to African Americans in which he blamed them for harassment and discrimination. Many people are calling this an attempt to sway potential jury pools for the upcoming second trial, as it has been made clear that prosecutors are working to retry this case. And I'm with you on this. I don't want to take that bet because this is such a bad idea from the outside.
Right, but yes, of course, we all think it strikes me as less of a bad idea as more BS.
Right.
It's just not, nobody's going to pay for this. This is not, that said, you know, I thought there was a 0% chance that Donald Trump would be the Republican nominee.
That's
a 0%
true.
Chance he'd be president. There's a whole swath of Americans that I am,
out of touch with.
Apparently, I'm quite out of touch with, and that reflects poorly on me as well. That said, this feels like a nonsensical thing. Who would set this up? Who would book this?
They did a big victory dance after the Bill Cosby hung jury, and the Cosby side came out, and there was really all this rah-rah and rhetoric that you'd associate with a victory. And again, it was not an acquittal. It was just a hung jury. This strikes me as part of that. You know, this is more grandstanding to, again, create the notion that Cosby cares about this.
And that he's a free man. Like, look how free he is. He's taken this experience, learned from it, and he's going to go help at-risk people. And
no,
by
not
at
learned
risk,
from it, because I think the impetus or the implication here is like, oh, people are going to try and like take your money.
No, he's
falsely
learned,
accuse you.
Learned the wrong thing. He's going to, their claim there would be he's learned from it. Not that he's remorseful, but he's learned what can happen to you
when you're wrongly accused.
He can save the rest of you innocent people.
Right, he can save the rest of you uninnocent people.
Yeah, don't put yourself in a situation like mine where situation and events were misconstrued by all these people to suggest somehow that I had raped them.
Anybody in the control room since Kim
no,
and Mark
no
won't bite on the $20? Nothing for Bart?
No,
Jesus?
No.
Jesus
Edwin?
Shaking his head.
Also
Edwin,
no.
Okay. Everybody's out. Whoever that other person is like, I don't see the top of their head.
Well, another part of the story worryingly came from another juror who came forward and had some different things to say than the previous juror who had argued that they were deadlocked 10-2 in favor of a guilty
I didn't read that. Some juror said it was 10-2 for
another jury
for
did.
Guilty.
But there's a new juror that has come out and has spoken to the Philadelphia Inquirer in particular. He didn't really seem to believe Constad. He said that, graphic six, please, that her testimony was well coached. Let's face it, she went up to his house with a bare midriff and incense and bath salts. What the heck? Indicating that he believes she was sort of, by showing her belly, asking to be drugged and raped. Of course, that's how it works, doesn't it? No. Later, Constad.
Well, he might have been one of the two. Right? You know, I mean, it was 10-2, so it's.
I think it's heavily implying he was one of the people who wanted to acquit him. Constad reported the incident to Cosby. Constad reported the incident to police in January 20, 2005 and sued Cosby the following March. They reached a settlement in November 2006. This anonymous juror to that said, that's hard for me to believe that I've been injured and it takes a year to report. Later, he also said that the other jurors struggled over legal definitions and were usually split when trying to reach a verdict on three counts of aggravated incident assault. He also said he blamed the deadlock on specific issues with the language, in particular the words reckless and severely impaired, and he felt the language was, quote, too legal, which makes me worried about the jury selection process.
Yeah, well, you can see, I'm sure that was a juror that the Cosby people wanted. And
he also claimed it was split down the middle.
All right, well,
which contradicts the 10-2 from before.
Well, I'm sure they might have been on some counts, and I don't know what the 10-2 juror said. There were three counts. They might have been 10-2 on for conviction on one. Obviously, it would have been a big victory for the prosecution if they'd gotten any conviction. Look, it's hard to convict someone for, he's right. And the legal definitions are complicated, and they're inherently complicated.
I mean, on the subject of language, I don't like the language this juror is using, indicating that the victim is to blame because of what she wore.
No, that's ridiculous.
And you know, rape is, it's not about what you dress. And I don't know how incense became this, you know, accessory to sexual activity and not just the thing you burn when you're covering up the smell of weed. It's like this is intense victim blaming, and it scares me that there are people like this in a jury of my peers, allegedly. This would make me want to go reach out to one judge instead.
Well, the jury system has all kinds of problems in that, what is it, voir dire, where they essentially pick the jurors for a particular case. As Ben said, or I think alluded to, they get sort of certain jurors there that they kind of want. And in this case, you have a juror, it sounds like, who's looking for things to hang an acquittal on, like the verbiage associated with the law. And I mean, if you start blaming the victim, as Kim says, I mean, then that just is absurd. I mean, you shouldn't even be playing in this game. If we're going to start looking at the way she was dressed, that has nothing to do with it. To press the point, you know, she could show up in a bikini at Bill Cosby's house. That doesn't necessarily give you that doesn't give him any right, of course, to drug her and rape her. I mean, it's obscene to even think about it that way.
It is inherently incredibly hard to get a sexual assault conviction for something that happened 12 years ago. It just is. There is, because it is, as they say, it becomes he said, she said. I'm not saying that's right. I'm saying that if you're Bill Cosby's lawyer, it's not hard. And you see the advantages that they have in, like, you wonder, to Kim's point, like, why did what she was wearing come up? But of course, she's the victim, and you get to describe the events, and it still works. That's what's crazy, is that in 2017, after all the lessons that theoretically men have been taught, right, over the last, thankfully, 20 years, but should have been taught forever, hey man, it doesn't matter.
It just feeds into another problem, which is, what does a woman have to say to be believed? We have cases where you can say everything right, you can do everything right, and still people from the outside will be like, oh, she's a slut. Oh, she was asking for it. She's just trying to grab money from him. It's just, you have this stacked against you already going in. What do you have to do to have credibility? Do I need to be wearing like a three-piece suit everywhere I go?
Yeah, that's right. No, you're right. And yeah, I don't know the answer to that question. Like with the Philando Castile verdict,
exactly.
There has to be a lot more here. There's to be a chain. You know, we need my therapist always says, Gary Penn, by the way, terrific therapist. you know, you need to have a change of heart. So that's a seminal change. We have to change the system of what we, there's the likelihood that someone would make up that they were sexually assaulted, given what women have to go through, seems preposterous to me. Who would make that up? That said, we have a system in America where you're presumed innocent, and the rights that we want to see applied to the state, the prosecutorial power of the state is overwhelming, right? So when you put we want to see the same rules apply to a man accused of sexual assault that apply to anybody else who deserves their day in court and a right to defend themselves. And they need the latitude to defend themselves. And unfortunately, that latitude has led to an ability to, it would appear still in this day and age, successfully blame the victim. And when you add in the fact that Bill Cosby is wealthy and can even the playing field in a way that most Americans can't, in the way that, you know, bankers can, in the way that O.J. Simpson could, because again, you're talking about rich people, that makes it incredibly hard to get a conviction for a case that is ultimately about, it comes down to, as that guy said, the believability of the two people involved, and that's it, because there's no witnesses and there's no medical evidence.
Yeah, and a couple of points. First of all, on the last point, the believability, they're obviously making efforts to run down Constant as a witness, and they're running down her story, and they do that in the ways that the juror sort of mentioned. One of them is, well, it took so long for her to bring this complaint forward. If there really was an issue, why wasn't that complaint forwarded earlier? Of course, there are all kinds of explanations for that. The first one is that it's a tremendously humiliating and embarrassing and awful process. Witness this case, and you can see why no one would want any part of it.
And an earlier prosecutor decided not to prosecute it. which also, again, comes up and has to make, you would imagine, abstractly makes a difference with a jury.
But then she, and I think this is one of the things that is really speaking so much in her favor, she gets a settlement from Bill Cosby on this case, of course. So she has no financial incentive to press this further, right?
Yeah, right.
This is pressed now by the state.
That's right.
And it would suggest that there is legitimacy on her part as a witness, and yet she, of course, is victimized by what I think is, it's a real character assassination on a level that you wouldn't normally see in a courtroom, because this is played out all over the world. I mean, so she really, I think she pays a huge price.
And it's prejudicial. We've long established in this country prejudicial to the accused to bring about other similar charges. If he'd been convicted of previous crimes, you might be able to get that in if it was exactly the same. But the fact that 60 other women have accused him, theoretically, the jury heard about one other victim.
Right.
No sane person in America, if they were told, hey, by the way, there's 60 other women saying.
Oh, the juror had something to say on that. He called it unbelievable.
Right, so he decided, so he heard it, he knew it, and decided that that was also untrue?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He said Cosby has already been punished, which is not true. This is why we have trials in courts in general. And it was disheartening, to say the least.
That's why I say that's a juror who's clearly looking for things to hang an acquittal on. Mm-hmm. You know, you see it in a lot of high-profile cases. And if the minute you're ready to say, well, I don't believe it, I think all of those, that's just, I don't believe any of them. And Bill Cosby's been through enough. The minute you have that kind of sympathy and your heart's breaking for this gazillionaire, super famous guy, you're just looking for something to hang that acquittal
and,
on.
And Andrea Constand's willingness to go through this, because she could have stopped this prosecution just by saying, I'm not going to do it. They did it because of her willingness and her believability. So her willingness to put herself through this is makes her a hero.
Hmm. All right, let's move on to our next story. Consent is something that can be withdrawn at any time, whether you're talking about trespassing, loaning money. But in one state, it cannot be withdrawn for sex. This is happening in the state of North Carolina. If you are a woman, if sex has already started, you cannot legally stop what is happening thanks to a legal loophole. Now, there is one state senator who is working to stop this, and that is Senator Jeff Jackson. He says, North Carolina is the only state in the country where no doesn't really mean no. Right now, if a woman tells a man to stop having sex, he is under no legal obligation to do so, as long as she initially consented. If sex turns violent, the woman has no right to tell the man he must stop. So he has proposed Senate Bill 553. It states that a person who continues to engage in intercourse after consent is withdrawn can be charged with rape. The bill applies specifically to vaginal intercourse. Now, this happened after a case in 1977 in which a woman, she engaged in sex with her estranged husband, and he turned violent, and she told him to stop, and he didn't. And later, the Supreme Court of the state ruled that this doesn't count as rape because she consented initially. And it's coming up again now because of the case of Aaliyah Palmer. Aaliyah Palmer says she had initially consented to have sex with a man, but withdrew her consent when he turned violent. I said, and that's her speaking, "You're hurting me, stop." She repeated this demand several times, but he refused to stop. Four soldiers who had been present at the party and who filmed Palmer's sexual assault were charged with peeping Tom counts, but the man who forced himself on her was not charged with any crime thanks to this loophole.
First of all, there's just so many things wrong. It makes you embarrassed to be a guy. It makes me embarrassed. Like, who's filming it? What are you doing? Why are you filming it? And it's not like, I got it. If you were having sex with a woman and she told you to stop, it would be disappointing. I've been disappointed literally millions of times in my life by various things. Like, just deal with some disappointment and go on with your day. And the fact that we have to codify this into law is crazy.
Like, it is crazy because It's just like, it looks like someone who's never had sex made this law. Where it's just like, oh, you can't stop. You're a robot. There's a machine and you can't turn it off. And you can. You're two human beings. This is a very, I would say, close or intimate act, you do have control over the situation, or at least you should.
And if you're going to 100% of men are going to go through their lives and never have this happen because you're not acting like an adult. But these, like, somehow, but again, you're not going to turn violent. I get it. That's the main reason, I guess, that things, the circumstances would change. Obviously, if somebody tells you to stop doing anything, you should stop doing it. Mm-hmm. And this should be number one on the list. But if you get told to stop punching a person, you should also stop punching them. This is you turned what you thought was I can't believe I'm about to use this word, it grosses my wife out, a tender.
Oh.
potentially loving
I like
act.
Tender.
Into violence in an instant. Just stop, man.
Well, look, there's Ben is right, of course. The word stop, you know, there's no misinterpreting that. I might take issue with the tender sex thing because I think there are people doing it in a lot of different ways,
sure,
right?
Yeah,
and so,
sure.
So, and I think Ben knew that. That's why he sort of offered that word haltingly. but so we understand that sex can occur in all these different ways and kink and everything, but one thing is agreed upon. When I say stop, or I have my code word, or whatever the deal
is. Right.
It's over. We stop. Then. It's insane that we need a law to establish this.
Well, back on the topic of the law, Jackson spoke to this, Graphic 14. He said his bill titled Revoke Consent for Intercourse never got a hearing in the Senate and will likely be dead for the remainder of the 2-year legislative session. He will continue to push similar bills until the law is changed. And as I said earlier, this is the only state where it's not a part of the law. However, in most states, it is actually a gray area. There are some states where consent can be withdrawn, including California, Kansas, South Dakota, and Maine. Only one state, Illinois, has codified this in law.
Well, that is wild.
It's just, but again, it's less about the law and more about, you know, what is wrong with guys, man? It's just, it's not, whatever, it's almost possible to find the right words. It's not that difficult.
Right.
It's not that difficult.
There are those who would say this is a sexualized, I mean, always the case, but I mean, now hyper-sexualized and a hyper-violent culture. And you probably can make a pretty good argument for that in many ways. And in that environment, in this time, maybe this is the kind of conversation and legislation that has to go down.
And it's part of this overall movement of having people who aren't victims feel like victims,
right?
Right. This is the same logic. It's far more serious as the war on Christmas. Like, there's no war on men. Everything's fine. Everything as it was. We still have. You have control over your own life. Men are not suddenly powerless in this world, right?
Right.
The idea that women should have the status that they should have had since the beginning of time is not a threat to you. And if 1 out of every 1,000 times, or 10 out of every 1,000 times, or 10 out of every 12 times, if you're this terrible at it, somebody's going to tell you no in the middle of sex, you stop. It is not a threat to your manhood. But I guarantee you, in defending this bill, we know what some of the thought is, that women are somehow out to trap and trick us, and that women are going to, oh, what about women who decide that there's some plan afoot here to rob you of what is yours. It is not yours. It requires two people. And if one of them's not into it, there is no, that's it. There's no consent. Sad day for you.
I think what you'll also hear on this, the argument against, is we don't need this bill. I mean, everybody knows that. Those people who aren't going to respect the word no aren't going to respect it more if this legislation passes. I think that's what you're going to hear a lot more of.
All right, I think it's about time to go to break. When we come back, we have stories about, well, relating to making a murder on Netflix and fashion.
Wow, that's quite a spectrum.
Are we not? Welcome back to the Young Turks, everyone. I want to tell you more about TYT members. Power the Young Turks, keep us independent, and they also get access to exclusive TYT Network content. This includes podcasts, live streams, Young Turks archives. I almost said archives. That's not a word. You can learn more at tytnetwork.com/join. And you will have access to the post game, which is available now at tytnetwork.com/postgame. This week, it is hosted by Malcolm, Steve-O, and Brett Ehrlich. They are talking about Steve's trip to Europe on behalf of TYT and Weekly World News, which I don't know what that is. But enjoy it.
That's like from Airplane. That's like World Weekly News.
But they spell it like this.
Oh,
World.
Oh, I see. I don't know what that is, Andy. But the real World Weekly News was like boy trapped in refrigerator eats own foot.
You know, oh, that's, good.
Yeah. Wild headlines and even more. The stories are even wilder.
So you can watch Malcolm, Brett, and Steve and their takes on that. And it's available right now. But don't watch it right now. Watch the show because we are live. I'm going to move into right back into our rundown.
I tell you, if people break away from this show to watch a post-game show whose major selling point is Steve talks about his European vacation.
Yeah, then this is pretty good.
Then we are not doing our job.
A new low.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. We got something pretty good.
Yeah.
I want to remind you of a story you may have been very intensely about a while back and maybe since forgotten. But Brendan Dassey, who you may remember as Stephen Avery's cousin in Netflix's Making a Murderer documentary, he won a major court victory as a federal appeals court upheld an earlier federal judge overturning his conviction of sexually assaulting and killing Teresa Harbach. You may remember, if you've seen that footage in the documentary, in which he was being questioned at age 16 with no parents or no lawyer present. It also suggested that Mr. Dassey was improperly questioned and that he was mentally unfit. So federal judge William E. Duffin found that Mr. Dassey was coerced into a confession in which he admitted that he assisted his uncle, Stephen Avery, in sexually assaulting and killing the photographer, Teresa Halbach. Dassey later recanted the confession last August. So in a 2-1 decision, a panel of the United States Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit said that it agreed with the ruling. And for now, Dassey, he's now age 27. He will remain in jail. The Wisconsin Department of Justice has indicated they want to appeal the panel's decision.
So this is the second big victory for Brendan Dassey, getting a federal judge to vacate a murder conviction is a rare event. Now, 3 out of 4 judges who have ruled on this case, this 2-1 decision by the panel of the 7th District Court of Appeals, and by the first federal judge, Judge Duffin, that's 3 judges out of 4 who have vacated, who want to vacate this conviction. Brendan Dassey should never have been in prison. It's a giant, colossal, huge miscarriage of justice that Brendan Dassey is in. Everyone who saw that show and saw that confession knows it. Knows that the cooperation between his counsel and the investigator for the cops was outrageous on that alone. Forget ineffective counsel. That's it. And they blew it. And they had no reason to go after Brendan Dassey and include him in a prosecution of Steve Avery. I feel like they did it because it made their case against Avery make more sense. And they ended up willingly putting a 16-year-old kid in prison for the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. You don't get 3 federal judges be willing to vacate a murder conviction unless you have totally blown that case. They've totally blown the case. If there's an ounce of courage there at the Wisconsin Department of Justice, they don't appeal it to the full 7th Circuit, and they don't take it to the Supreme Court. Hopefully the 7th Circuit will let that 2-1 decision stand, and the Supreme Court won't take the case and Brendan Dassey be out of prison. That is not a comment in any way on whether Steve Avery did it. But Brendan Dassey needs to be free. If this is in the United States of America, Brendan Dassey has no business in prison.
Well, the Making a Murderer documentary was full of what you saw and what Ben is sort of alluding to here is a lot of ego on the part of prosecutors and law enforcement. And I suspect that maybe some of that ego has been beaten out of them through the legal process thus far. But I tend to agree with the Brendan Dassey part of this equation. And as Ben also sort of alluded to, there's another part of this, and that's Stephen Avery. And the Making a Murderer was a documentary that was damning toward the prosecution of Stephen Avery. But if you actually look at the facts, I did a whole episode of my podcast, which you can download at edge-show.com.
Nice plug.
It's called The Edge with Mark Thompson. But we did a whole episode about just this, the refutation of making a murderer, with a reporter there in Wisconsin who was following this case. And so you began to see the inconsistencies in the way the documentary presented the facts. But again, allowing for that, allowing for the Stephen Avery part of this, the fact that he likely did murder that photographer, it would appear that Brandon Dassey has served time that he never should have served.
Yeah, they don't have it on Brandon Dassey. They don't have it, and then they accidentally got a confession out of him that was coerced in the worst possible ways, and the betrayal by his defense attorney, the incompetent, foolish guy who had, to me personally, thought no business being a lawyer, was egregious. So again, you have three federal judges vacating a murder conviction. They don't do that. They do not do that. They got to let him go. They don't have a case without the confession. So if the confession's thrown out, Brandon Dassey is going to walk.
Last point, Kim, I just was going to mention it for those who haven't seen.
I haven't finished it, which is why I'm not saying that much.
What Ben's talking about when he talks about coercing the confession is they had Dassey there, this 16-year-old kid, and they have him hour after hour after hour after hour. I mean, they literally no food, nothing. And
he retained a counsel. They didn't have, his lawyer wasn't there. His lawyer knew he was there and didn't come. I mean, and his lawyer cooperated with the prosecution's investigator. They're battling each other, and it wasn't cooperating like, hey, let's make a deal. Mm-hmm. It was cooperating, and again, if you watch it, Brandon Dassey's got no business in prison. The case against Stephen Avery is much stronger, and I will say that I heard a podcast, obviously not as good as The Edge, but on Alec Baldwin's podcast, which they're both excellent. But Baldwin had the Making the Murderer producers on, and they were much more clear in their arguments that there was a grave miscarriage of justice against Brandon Dassey. They are unclear why they thought it was a good documentary, and that even if Stephen Avery did it, and obviously we're never going to know unless they arrest someone else, right, who is somehow connected to this case, or unless some cops admit that they framed Stephen Avery. But since we don't have another murderer, that the case against Avery is less clear. They feel like the case against Dassey is clear,
right,
that this guy had no business being in prison.
I actually heard that same episode, and I felt what Ben is saying as it pertains to what we're talking about is that the filmmakers really feel that Brandon Dassey is an innocent man. They waffled on Stephen Avery, and more to the point, I feel they've been given a pass on that, and I think Baldwin gave him a pass on that episode. I heard it. And what happened, and just again, then we'll move on, is that Making a Murder was such a sensation, notwithstanding the fact that Kim didn't see all of it. It was such a sensation that these filmmakers were celebrated, and they started doing the talk show circuit and television and radio. They did Alec Baldwin's podcast, etc. And I think at that point it was tough to walk anything back.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe some justice served in Brandon Dassey's, the decision regarding Brandon Dassey today.
Incompetent, whether Stephen Avery did it or not, the police work was, there were many moments of incompetent investigation and egos taking over. That's certainly true, which is what made the documentary partly compelling, is that you see, and it was a great insight for Americans, I think, to be able to see that whole process. Great drama in that case.
Okay, we're running low on time. Should I skip to the last story? Okay, we're skipping to the last story, which is drastically changing gears. So you may not know this, but the UK is going through an intense heat wave right now, with many opting to wear clothing that would keep them more cool and breezy. But what do you do if you're a schoolboy and you're at a school that has a no shorts rule? Well, the answer is, of course, bollocks to that. Let's wear skirts. Let's take a look. So boys at this school, the Iska Academy in Exeter, England, they have a strict code that bans male students from wearing shorts, even on days so hot, wearing long pants. It just seems impossible. So these boys are protesting by wearing skirts, oftentimes borrowed from sisters and friends, which is technically in the dress code.
Where borrowed from, I mean, they all everybody's sister has the exact same skirt?
It's a uniform. It's a school uniform.
Maybe. Yeah. But the same size is what I thought you were going to say.
Yeah. But I mean, they all have a sister at the school at the same time. You know?
Yeah, that was a mad internet search the night before this happened.
I mean, those guys, their parents bought them those skirts. Let's not kid ourselves. They didn't all borrow the exact same skirt.
So their parents were like, let's do this, son.
Right, that's right.
Boys at the school said they appreciated the nice breeze and they found it quite refreshing. But the principal in the school,
That's the greatest graphic we've ever made.
I like it.
Quite refreshing, says student.
It's refreshing.
The Guardian.
Quote, refreshing, the Guardian. Yeah, you don't want to get sued for, we don't want to get sued for plagiarism. Hey, we got to attribute. We're not the ones saying it was quite refreshing. That's from the Guardian.
I wear skirts. I find them refreshing.
Sure.
You can quote me on that. Mm. The principal of the school, Amy Mitchell, said, this is graphic 32. Shorts are not currently part of our uniform for boys, and I would not want to make any changes without consulting both students and their families. However, with hotter weather becoming more normal, I would be happy to consider a change for the future. So it looks like the protest the boys put on.
Finally, a climate change story I can relate to.
What are they wearing underneath though?
It looks like shorts. Like bike shorts or something like that.
maybe culottes.
Yeah, that's the great thing. Yeah. You can't wear shorts except you can hide your shorts.
Only if you wear a skirt over them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and get some matching Mary Janes.
Yeah, the white socks and the Mary Janes is a terrible look.
Well, I mean, looking at this, I think a lot of dress codes are stupid. For other reasons too. I mean, a lot of the times when we're looking at these in America, we're seeing dress codes that are basically saying, girls, you can't be showing, you know, parts of your arm or your shoulders because it's too distracting for the boys ostensibly, which is, it's silly. It's we're teaching kids silly things by imposing this. So I'm with the boys.
I hadn't thought of that part. You make a really good point, but I'm for a dress code. I even support really uniforms. Because I think they take away the economic disparities that can oftentimes find themselves in a school. Like so-and-so is wearing Givenchy and somebody else has got a YSL purse. And once you take it all away and everybody sort of has the same outfit, I think that helps things in that regard anyway.
It's pretty egalitarian, or at least appearing so. And it takes the onus away from, you know, thinking that looks are what matters most and you can focus on maybe other things.
Right, you should be older before you realize that looks are all that matters. I like a school uniform too if a school feels the need for it. I don't have any problem with it. I do obviously have a problem if it becomes draconian and incredibly sexist. You know, you can't.
Let the boys wear shorts.
Right, just silly.
Or skirts if they want to.
Yeah, you want to talk to families and students. Just let the boys wear shorts. It's too hot.
Wouldn't have a long meeting about it. Just let the guys wear the shorts.
Yeah, I mean, it was, what year were in 2017? I think it was the winter, it was the summer of 2015 when Cenk uniformly, by the way, not to be punny, allowed that we didn't have to wear pants during the show.
Was that ever a rule?
Yeah, no. We had,
no one has ever told me what to wear.
I'm not wearing pants right now.
It's what we all look forward to.
Yeah. It's very hot here. It's unseasonably warm. No, look, these are, this is funny. It's amusing. But you know, I have a daughter and and she says things like, you know, boys don't wear dresses. Mm-hmm. And you know, 20 years ago, I would have said, that's right. You know, and now you're like, well, most boys who you will see do not wear dresses, but some boys wear dresses. And if a boy wants to wear a dress, he should wear a dress. And then she'll say, so some boys wear dresses, and I go, that's right. And you think, well, great everything's moment. Still around. No, the world is still spinning. We're in no more danger. That's okay. Everything's fine.
There is also such a thing as kilts, also, you know, kind of around the area as well. Right.
Yeah, it originated in that part of the world.
All right.
But as you know, like whenever Josie, my daughter, wears a skirt, she has to wear somersault shorts
because
you know
she's
the kids.
Little.
Right. But I mean, so you know, but these kids, whatever. So if you got to, this could be a whole. This could move somersault shorts new industry for adolescent boys.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well,
kids are gonna go. They want to do some somersaults.
I think we don't have quite enough time to do another story, so we're gonna have to end pretty soon.
Oh well.
We have 1 minute and a half, so.
We could still show some more pictures of these kids.
Let's look at more skirts. No.
It's time for me to again mention my
Mark podcast, Thompson on the Edge podcast.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, Ben Mankiewicz has actually been on, and actually with his brother Josh Mankiewicz, and it was kind of a cool episode. So I recommend people find it, and if not that, there are other great things related to politics. Michael Shore from the Young Turks is also a frequent visitor, and we do politics and also other stuff. So anyway, it's at edge-show.com, edge-show.com. It's right there on your screen.
I'd like to see a podcast with Ben and his brother, because I've watched your brother's reports, and you guys seem to have different point of views on kind of news.
No, actually, we have fairly similar points of view. He does, you know, he is a more mainstream. You know, he's on.
Well, yeah.
He's on the network.
no one dies in this particular conversation,
right,
which is not something he's used to. Josh,
let me do my Josh Mankiewicz impersonation here. But police tell a very different story.
Oh my God, that's scary good. That's scary good.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a great way to close the show
brilliant.
This week. Ben Mankiewicz, brother of
Josh
Mankiewicz, who sounds exactly like that. Thank you for watching The Young Turks.
You know.
We will see you next week. Bye-bye.